Now.
Okay, can you hear me? Testing,
Quite
testing.
good.
Hello, hello, hello.
Oh, can you?
Yes. Good. So now
Yes.
I can go to.
Perfect.
Slides, here we go. Yeah, thanks for coming to my talk. This year's talk is called Deep Sea Programming, Unix Philosophy and Distributed Offshore Systems. So here you have a bit of information on this slide, but the most important thing for the exercises that are part two of this talk are the slides. So please fetch them already now so you have them for later. Okay.
Broken.
Broken.
This is
Yeah.
just your
So
link is broken.
my link is broken.
Just add 0 discrete points.
Ah, yes. Sorry, sorry, sorry.
Can you re-marking?
Yeah, let's
Please
see.
go with that camera. I will post it on IRC.
Oh yeah, okay. Let me just fix the slide anyway.
Don't know if you can because you're presenter. Okay. Live fixing.
Yeah, live fixing. I guess
Thank
it's the
you.
one.
Ah, you posted it already. Ah,
Yeah,
here we
missing
are.
the type. There we go.
Reset. Reset, reset.
Reset. Here we go. There it is.
Ta-da! Yes, it's
Yes. Good. Thank you, Joshua.
good.
All right. So, Unix principles or applying Unix principles to various things is one of my favorite things to do and to think about and to talk about. And the Unix principles are so flexible. They're not constrained to a single programming language or even a single operating system, in my opinion. It's about philosophy and a way of thinking and an approach to cooperation and development and so on. So we can apply these things to many different systems. And today I would like to talk about some offshore systems that I'm working on at the moment. And tomorrow we will talk about or go into Unix philosophy in Vitre. That'll be very good. 20H gave us all some Unix that we can process here. That'll be very good. So the outline of this talk is really how we can benefit from something which used to be a very hyped technology. Now time has passed. We can strip away the hype and apply our way of thinking and these Unix true and tried principles. So first, I would give an overview of the offshore system that we're developing, and at the end, we'll transition into some hands-on exercises so you can play with these things. So
Nice.
please, during the talk, ask your questions right away. I'll keep an eye on the chat. Because it will not have an end per se, because we have the exercises in the end. So just fire away. Okay, so I work now at a place called the Danish Geotechnical Institute. It's on the web, not Gopher yet, sorry, but on the web at geo.dk. And we are a smallish company, around 250 employees in Denmark, near the capital in Lyngby and in Aarhus, where I live. And our primary business is geotechnical investigations onshore and offshore, where we go out and do boreholes and drill and make investigations for wind farms and infrastructure and all kinds of stuff. So we make a lot of holes in the ground, so we are a very holy company. We are trying to make the world more holy. So in addition to this, there's also environmental consultancy. Like next week, when I return from Vitré, I have to go to some place where they tried to cover up a garbage dump after a latex company. So latex is producing pollution both in computers and in reality. So it's bad. We also do laboratory tests. We do geodata analysis where we combine different data sources to learn more about a certain place. And I'm involved in some of the above, but mainly geoscientific software development. So, because it's kind of a small place, we have some options to think outside of the box. there's not too many layers of HR and opinion. Good. So we are in the middle of the largest single investment in the history of the company, and that is building a new offshore rig from the ground up. So everything from the hardware, this is 50 tons of hardware plus 4 containers that are located on a ship. And in addition to this hardware, there's all of the control systems. So we can make some good and cost-effective measurements offshore. 20H asks, how big is my rig? Well, 20 tons, 20, 30 tons plus containers. That should be plenty size for her pleasure. This is a very realistic sketch of the situation. So we rent a ship and then we fill it up with these containers. And then we have a rig hanging over the side of the vessel. So what happens next is that this ship is sailed to somewhere where they want to construct maybe a wind farm or do some subsea tunneling or cable application and so on. So it powers off the engine, it stabilizes its position as good as it can, and then the rig lowers a cage onto the seafloor. And this lowered part is the one that weighs 20 tons. So there's a vertical line of pipes here. That's actually metal rods with fiber optic cables. So the metal rods are used to apply a pushing force to the seafloor. And the fiber optic cables is, of course, all of the control software. Because in the cage that is lowered to the seafloor, there are both, I think, around 15 boards with electronics and sensors and PLCs and all kinds of stuff, Ethernet and whatnot. So this is definitely subsea, right, Paso? So this is lowered all the way to the seafloor. And the first order of business is to figure out if it's stable. Now it's standing on the seafloor. Is it sinking or is it stable? And if it's all okay, then we can begin to push this metal rod into the subsurface and detect what kind of sensors, what kind of stresses the sensors are measuring. So we can get an idea of how much bearing capacity this soil has for wind turbines and so on. So after that is done, then we pull everything up again and go to the next site and make a new one. And finally, you can then make a big monopile for a wind farm. And there are many types of foundations, but most of them require just a few geotechnical surveys. And this idea of just pushing a rod into the subsurface is very, very cheap compared to making a borehole and getting material up and laboratory samples and so on. This is actually measuring on the ground. So very, very effective. And here on this link, you can see some different types of foundations if you like. Okay, some more metrics on this offshore system. So a single of these rigs has up to 800 sensors that shout out some data, maybe up to 10 hertz. So that is quite a lot of data, real-time data. And then different systems either produce or consume this data. That could be SCADA control software, PLCs, environmental sensors of different kinds, webcams. There's navigation data from the ship. There's scientific results because we don't want millivolt. We want to know something about the strength like Newton or Pascal from the seafloor. In addition to that, there are of course control messages. So we want to know when did a guy push a button to move the ship or when did the survey start and so on. So these control messages act as temporal anchoring points. So we know when an operation starts and when it ends. So it's not about pressing start and stop in a recording sense. It's a result of the operations that are done that you can't get around. So asynchronicity of the data is almost guaranteed. There's no such thing as synchronous sampling and row after row of uniform data. On the other hand, you know, things can come and go. Data frequencies can go up and down. We really only want to push data through this system when it makes sense to do so. So if a sensor doesn't record any change, it can just it doesn't have to report a constant value over and over again. Yes, so in the processing of all of this, there are different operations at play. For example, aggregation of time series and combination of sources. Perhaps you need something from your navigation data to produce a result from one of the sensors, for instance. So it's combining data sources, doing statistics, and of course also storing all of this into a time series database or whatever you want to work with. Because then you can do one-way operations or data reduction transformations later on. And for example, transform this asynchronous data into a synchronous format with that lossy conversion that involves. So yeah, this is, as I said, the biggest developmental project or investment that the company has ever done. So we are fortunate to have many involved partners on board. Some of them are, of course, very focused on the hardware and the hydraulics and so on, but there are also some cool IT guys involved. And what I present in the following is some concepts that have come from this. And it's also been quite nice in this project to meet people that are of similar thinking, that agree with Unix principles and modularity and so on. So the Unix philosophy is incredibly useful when approaching a complex thing like this. And there have been some clashes with some other people, which were maybe more Microsoft-minded developers. Mm-hmm. And the problem here is that you can put forward some questions. For instance, does the client know exactly what they want? Do we know everything that we want to solve? Do we know if our assumptions are valid in complex systems and as things begin to interact and so on? Do we have full specifications? And should we produce a big integrated C# monolith to handle the computations and flow and storage and logic? And you can very quickly compute the answer to all of this.
No.
Yeah, it's not gonna be the right way, because we don't know what we fully need. We don't know what we don't know. So the best way to approach this kind of thing is to develop things from working prototypes that you then mature into something better. So these working prototypes and the Unix type of thinking really uncovers what happens when things begin to get complex. So 20H asks, what do we do for a time database? So we use PostgreSQL with a TimescaleDB extension, so that the timestamp is really the primary key for everything that comes in. And it is very, very simple on purpose, because by not having a clearly defined row for any kind of sensor, and instead having some freeform fields, then we can be flexible with this system and adapt new sensors later on and so on. So we're trying to think flexible here, because we have some existing systems that definitely are not flexible.
Mm.
Okay, so the data routing system, which we'll have some examples later on, is called MQTT. You probably have heard of this. Maybe you've already worked with it. There's an RFC for one of these parts, which is the TLS component of it. And if you haven't heard of it before, it started as a proprietary protocol for SCADA systems in the oil and gas industry. So that's pretty much guaranteed to trigger everyone, I think. But these days it's an open protocol. It's very lightweight, not as lightweight as maybe something developed 100% by Bitreich, but compared to other things out there, it is pretty lightweight. It's a published subscribed network protocol, and it's really meant for low bandwidth, high latency networks. But it doesn't have to be just on low bandwidth, high latency networks. This kind of design makes it also very efficient for high bandwidth, low latency networks, because then you are simply allowed to push way more data through it. It's a publish subscribe model, so it decouples the message producers from the consumers. You meet in the middle around a broker. So this means that instead of having all of your data in a single C-sharp program and kind of a monolith block or Pascal or whatever it's made in, the data is now living on the network. So because it's living on the network, you can connect whatever you want to the real-time data. So if you build the world's best C program to read some value in and publish a result from those inputs, then it can be its own little thing. It can be its own little module in that way, communicating via the network instead of being part of something rigid. Twinage asks, but where's the data stored when it lives on the network? So that's an interesting question, because it is intermittently stored on the broker, but the broker does not keep a full time series. Mm-hmm. So if you want to record everything, you need to subscribe to everything and then do whatever you want with it. Write it to text, store it in a database or whatever. So you can make agents which archive everything that is published on this data structure. How many computers are involved in this project? Joshua asks. How many run custom software you develop? Well, right now we are still prototyping, so it's virtual machines and so on. So a single machine as of now. But when we're scaling up, we'll have an offshore part, an onshore part, and then make data transfer between the two systems. 20H, will the broker become fat and die of diabetes and hypertension sometime? Maybe, we'll see. We've stress tested with millions of messages per second, and it didn't die of diabetes. But who knows? Maybe 60 years of bad lifestyle choices will make it die. But yeah, the beautiful thing is that the broker does not remember. It transfers, okay. and then it's ignorant, okay. After that. Good. So the central concepts here, we touched upon these already a little bit. So there is the broker, which is the central network server that routes the messages. We have clients that either publish messages via the broker or subscribe to messages on the broker. And these messages are TCP/IP data delivered packets between the clients. And topics, let's save that for the next slide, but I'll just finish off saying that, of course, there are libraries for all kinds of programming languages, and I've listed just two here, but there are also command line clients, which we'll use later on. Okay, so just a disclaimer here, in these exercises, of course, this is kind of toy setups. Nothing here is particularly optimal or good practice. But we can still learn from it. So here I'll demonstrate some fundamentals and some principles that we can maybe have some fun with. Okay, yes, good fun. So if you go to the internet and search for tutorials on MQTT, almost every single tutorial out there is smart homes, and it's incredibly boring. It's some kind of example where we have different rooms and a thermometer in every room, and apparently that's very valuable information. But in practice is applied to some different more or less hyped applications. So as I said, the messages themselves are delivered via TCP/IP, so we have guaranteed delivery that way. Each message can also have a configurable max size, and actually it's quite liberal with most default configurations. I think 256 megabytes per message is allowed by default, which is crazy. You know, that's a lot of text if that's what you want to transfer. So the default behavior is that a topic begins existing as soon as you subscribe to it or as soon as you publish on it. So the broker does not put on by default any rules on the topic structure, anything like that. So if you invent a new sensor and you want to add this to the data structure and the network, you just post a message there. There's not more to it. When I connect as a subscriber to a topic, I will not receive any data that was older than my connection by default. I will only receive any new data that trickles in. But there's one exception to this, and that is that when I send a message, I can flag it as being retained.
Mm-hmm.
And retained means that the broker will remember it until for all new connections that are made, even in future time. So this is useful in one of the coming examples.
Mm.
Another possibility is to post a message as your last will or your testament. So if I drop, my connection drops, the broker will publish that last will or that testament. Mm. So that's cool, like saying I died as the testament. So others can act on that ungraceful disconnection. You can also, on the message level, specify the quality of service that you want the broker to uphold. So you can specify that a message is delivered at most once, or at least once, or exactly once. But these are beginning to get into the details. 20H asks, do you use a public broker so the Danish intelligence agency keeps your backups? That's a good idea. Yeah, but maybe they would also get annoyed with 6 million messages a second. I don't know. We can maybe ask. But yes, Joshua, this has a lot of similarities to ISE. So why use MQTT for this? Well, this hierarchical data structure through topics is actually a big advantage, and I'm going to demonstrate that in a little while, because we can, just like a directory tree on the file systems in our computers, we can have this hierarchical organization of where data is put. So as I mentioned, this tree exists as soon as someone publishes or subscribes to it, so it's not as rigid as a traditional directory tree. And by default, anyone can read or publish, but of course you can make the permissions more granular if you want. Okay, so an example of such a hierarchical organization could be that we have the first node in our tree called rig. So this could be all the sensor data from the rig. Then we have the sensors listed, and maybe the first topic is where all of the raw millivolt readings from the sensor are put. Then I can make a little program which reads messages from the raw topic and then computes a physical result, so going from millivolt to perhaps degrees Celsius, and post that on the physical topic that is just next to it in the hierarchy. So on, you can really spread out the data just like you would organize your vacation photos in some way, or just dump everything in a folder. And maybe you have another node at the outside where you maybe keep all the data from the ship, like battery levels, navigation data, speed, whatnot, waves, and so on. Actually, this rig, that's an interesting fact. This rig that we have here on the ship, it's heave compensated. So when you have waves going up and down, the entire rig is stabilized. So it goes up and down in the opposite direction. And that takes an incredible amount of energy to do so. Okay, when you subscribe to somewhere in this hierarchy, you can do so with wildcards. So in the second example down there, that says ship, and then dash, and then the hash, you subscribe to everything underneath the ship structure. So this would have navigation easting, navigation northing, and everything at the ship level. So this is like copying the entire folder. And then the third example, the plus, is a wildcard for one level in the tree. So this would have all of the physical values of the sensors in the rig.
Okay.
Good. 20H asks, so are technicians thrown around with the waves when fixing something in the rig? No, because they are they are thrown around relative to the ship, but not relative to space, to Earth.
Okay.
Yep. Okay, let's make an example here. So in this example, I will do like the hello world. I will subscribe and publish. So first, let's make a little helper script. In case you're not on OpenBSD, where we have the TS command, I have here a timestamp script. And this timestamp script reads standard in, and it simply outputs the standard in with a timestamp prepended. Oh, TS is in more utils in Linux. Okay. Okay, we have for these exercises a broker to play around with. So please remember this URI that we have here. Then we can play around with that later on. And as you can see, it's a Bitreich user, Bitreich password. It's running just plain MQTT, no TLS. TLS would be a bit messy with self-signed certificates here. And then it's at a certain port. Then we can start off by subscribing. And here we're using a command line program called Mosquito. At the very end of this presentation, I have some installation instructions, but it is in all of the Linux and BSD distributions that I looked in. So these are some command line tools where we can publish and subscribe. So this command, Twendage found it already on Gentoo. So I can hear his fan speed up now. That is the Gentoo way of life. So yeah, this is Mosquito Sub. It's subscribing to the MQTT URI, and then it's subscribing to hash. And this is the hash at the very outermost level or the root level, so it's subscribing to everything. Ooh, I can see that I have made a typo here. Interesting. So let's actually do this in practice. So if I just background the presentation here. Okay. Okay, here we have a shell where I have the Mosquito tools installed. So let's first export this URI. So we have the credentials and we don't need to retype everything. Now we can subscribe to the URI and subscribe to everything there. And we can make it print with the dash V flag the topic that a message comes from as the very first field. So let's see what happens.
It's working on my machine.
Yeah. Let's see what's going on.
I'm not an option, you're putting something. Minus L. You're missing minus L.
Yes. I need to tell it that we are giving it a UI. Okay, and nothing is happening. That's good. That's good. That's what we want. Because we didn't post anything. So
I can post something.
Can you see my second Tmux pane?
Oh, Tmux, yes.
Yeah, it's still on the screen. Good, good, good. So in this example here, let's just Okay, we have the UI already here. Here, I run now mosquito underscore pub. So this is publish, and it reads standard in as messages when I give it the dash L option. And I write it to a topic just called test. So in the upper pane now, it should say the topic name and then the date. And there we see that the message has made its way through.
I see it too.
Yeah, good, good, good. So this is already quite interesting because we have something that produces standard output and something which reads standard input.
Yeah.
And now we can do stuff with it. Now we can do Unix kind of fun things because we have pipes going.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, magic pipe.
Magic.
Okay. So, we have data structure on the network. We can interact with our data hierarchy with small modular clients. And this really brings all the benefits of Unix design into play. So we can make small, beautiful programs that do one thing well. We can build small prototypes where the code is so easy that everyone can understand it. We can make small portable things so we can deploy them wherever we want. We can use the other good principles of having ASCII file communication or ASCII communications. And we can really make modules which are filters. So I just stole some points there. Okay, I think my slides are messed up. I think because I changed one of the slides and then it regenerated some with another index.
So remove.
Yes, so let's just go forward. Yeep. Okay, good. Yes, I think we're back. So now we can do distributed computing. We can do the world's most inefficient pipe. We can take my date and put it through 28's grep and go to Joshua's GNU plot or whatever. We can really exploit this in a really bad and efficient way. But we can also do good things with it. Say that we have something more complicated, something which is compute intensive. We can have different agents on the network that listen to different messages and expect things in that way. So for instance, we could have some topics that listen for emoji prompts. We could have some topics which are APIs. We can have everything that, you know, the fantasy here is the limit. So in this way, we can do some quite rudimentary distributed computing, where we have text filters working here. But of course, if you had a well-defined, simple kind of problem, it's way more efficient to do one-to-one connections via Netcat or named pipes over SSH or whatever. Good. 28 says, how is pipe more inefficient compared to SOAP? Yeah, well, probably not. Yeah. Okay. Some more ideas here. We talked about testaments and last will. So this example, there are just some definitions up at the very top. Don't worry too much about those. We have a mosquito pub, which posts a message with a value 1 to an online topic. So this is a way of making a simple health check. So we say that we retain a message of 1 on a topic as soon as this program goes online. So if this is my ThinkPad, in the topic structure, it has a value of 1, then we know that this is currently alive. And then we can in a while loop, for instance, prints the local load and the host name and uptime or whatever to that topic or another one. And that is then published to our topic, but we then also give it a last will, this testament that puts the will payload to zero. So now if I destroy my ThinkPad because maybe I'm not happy with it anymore and I want a nice System 76 computer, then the value on this online topic will go from 1 to 0 because the connection is interrupted and the testament value comes into play. So that's a nice value or way of reporting the online status or if something is missing. Okay. Yes, we can also see statistics for the broker. That is the very final point here on this slide. And here we can see things like how many messages go through, the data size. We can also see things like the number of connected clients and so on.
How do you do that?
Sorry?
How do you do that? Because that command is doing something else, I guess.
No, this is a subscription to the topic Sys Broker and then everything under that.
It's the name.
Yes.
Like Windows.
Yes. It actually is kind of Windows. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, you can never have anything perfect. That would be blasphemy.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We already talked about standard in, standard out. This slide has kind of the concept one step further. So of course we know with good Unix programs, we both have standard in, standard out, but we also have standard error. So we can make FIFO pipes, name pipes for all of these, and then connect Mosquito clients to all of those. So we can make our local grep or BC or whatever org read input on one topic, then produce its output on another topic and its error messages on a third topic.
Wow.
So this is how you would do that. You would subscribe to these things and of course clean or kill all children if something goes bad.
What?
So here I run the child program that's being wrapped here and connect these named pipes to it. So locally I run this program and read data from the MQTT broker. And it's in a while loop because if it crashes, then it simply restarts. But of course, that is not a perfect contingency plan because you would lose any messages during restart. So you can improve on this. So with this, you can, for instance, run calculations. For instance, if you have BC, you can run BC on the network and compute what 4 plus 4 is. If that's, maybe that is a bit too advanced. You can also make this wrap your favorite CGI scripts, or you can make it run your Stable Diffusion program, and maybe it outputs a URL to the Bitreich meme cache or something like that. That would simply be reported on the different output topic. Okay, so let me just wrap up some of these loose thoughts and then we can maybe take a short break and then do exercises.
Yeah.
So this is just a brief intro, but I think there are lots of possibilities with coupling these kinds of principles with text streams.
Yeah.
And the easiest way is definitely just to use the existing client broker implementations that are out there and libraries. I think minimal C implementations would be nice because Mosquito is CMake and code of conduct and all kinds of stuff. A minimal implementation that maybe aims at a subset of features would be kind of cool. And I think it would also be very cool not to have the topic structure just as strings here in your prompt, but maybe even have a virtual file system representation of the data structure like in Plan 9 virtual namespaces or proc in Linux. That would be kind of cool. Good. So maybe let's take a break. What do you say, 20H?
I don't know if they. Where's the audio?
Oh, it's here in the.
So people hear it. No, actually, the thing is, now we are going like on IRC mode, because I already see the possibility that like distributed pipes over network.
Yep.
Actually, if you look at Mosquito, it's not that big. It's just 65K slog with all the crap around it, but it's written in C, so that's an advantage. Oh. Yeah, actually, the thing is, thank you very much for everyone for joining in. We will stop the recording and then go to the hacking mode, where he will introduce. So this is just so the challenges. Maybe you give an overview of the challenges.
Yes.
People already have the slides. We post them again, and then we are on IRC hacking together.
Yeah.
That would be my proposal.
Yes, and I will also just add that. Let's make this fun. So whoever puts in the first acceptable solution to each challenge gets a point, and then who gets the most points will get to choose some kind of free software foundation that I donate, let's say, 20 euros to. And then we have a bit of competition, so we can donate it all to Wayland or SystemD or... Okay. Well, thank you, and let's reconvene in 5 minutes.